increases the output, you're either going way higher or way lower. Single cell, multicellular is a great example. Alright? Okay. We already did that one.
Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't.
Okay, so cardiovascular system. We kind of jumped into this earlier. Our researchers are figuring this stuff out by dissecting corpses. Alright? We're grave robbers. Anatomists are grave robbers in the beginning. And some people call us that now. We start off with Galen. Alright? Galen thinks it's going to ebb and flow. Ebb and flow. And it's going to make these magical spirits, and they're going to magically go away once they're to whatever their destination is. And he thinks everything seeps together, everything just kind of ebbs and flows between each other. Okay? Bruno thinks that, thought that things were going to circulate like planets, and he got burned for it. William Harvey, Harvey shows experimental evidence, okay? He sees this pulmonary circuit, he sees the systemic circuit, he comes up with the concept of capillaries, which we don't actually see until we have microscopes, okay? Until we could really, really get in there. He did the math first, okay? Quantitative evidence. We wouldn't be able to make the amount of blood necessary if it went out to the extremities and disappeared. Okay? If it went wherever it was going and disappeared, we couldn't make enough because we weren't eating enough. He observed one-way valves between the atrium and the ventricles. Okay, it's going one way from the atrium in the ventricle. Keep moving. He found no pores and no openings in this ventricular septum. Okay, no holes. He could push water from the heart to the lungs to the heart, and then from the heart to the body back to the heart. Experimental evidence, he tested seepage, he probed where these things went. I know that seems very logical, it's very, very straightforward, but that's something people didn't really try and do, was follow the path as much. Water couldn't be forced backwards, so we realized that we have one-way valves, okay? We also see these one-way valves in our veins. I talked about that in our legs. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to get that blood back up to our heart, okay? Otherwise, we would just have massive swelling in our feet because gravity would pull the blood down, okay? So we actually have kind of a ratcheting system, a notching system, okay? It goes up through the vein or through the valve. As it comes back down, the valve closes, goes up through another valve, comes back down, closes the valve, okay? After the pressure's let up. What we were getting into was the comparative evidence, okay? That's what I'm going to focus on today. So, in a four-chambered heart, the left ventricle was much larger. We talked about how it's delivering blood to the entirety of the body. We also talked about how when you're delivering blood to the lungs, you don't want to have a lot of force because you don't want to send blood out through those lungs. Another thing he did was he looked at all the hearts of all the vertebrates, and we're going to go through and do that as well. Okay, so the vertebrates. We start off with jawless fishes, okay, cartilaginous bones. Cartilage is the precursor to bone evolutionarily. We see cartilage first giving structure in these fish, then we see bone development later. We actually initially see bone development in giant sharks called placoderms. These placoderms, it looks like the bone initially, these are lamprey. I don't have pictures of placoderms up there. Placoderms look initially like giant armored tank fishes, alright? Basically, they've got these big plates, alright? All over their body, okay? Big, giant, plated, tank-like fishes. So at first we think that bone was developing as a defensive mechanism. But once we really looked into it, we found that it was for electroreception. That bone was actually making it so that those larger sharks could more easily receive electrical signals through the water, okay? They could pick up the signals of something swimming further away because muscle activity causes an electrical current. Swimming up there, it could sense it, find it, and eat it, okay? Sharks do that now, okay? They have little small plates of bone beside their little electroreceptors. They use these electroreceptors to pinpoint you, fish, whatever, in the water, to an exact location, okay? They can track and find exactly that, okay? These initial cartilaginous, bony kind of fishes, okay, jawless fishes, they've got a really, really simple arm, all right? They don't have bone yet. We haven't even developed bone yet. So we've got cartilage to start. The next stop, there's a flathead. You know what that is? That's a flathead, okay? Very, very large. A shark would be like that, okay? These things eat sharks. That was their primary food source. So sharks, skinks, and rays are all pretty much in the same catch-all category, okay? They all eat in different ways.
So, okay, that was a shark? Like a prehistoric shark?
Yeah, prehistoric fish, yeah. Very, very large, very large. And one of the first places that we really are able to find bone, because they were so large, we can see because they're way, way back in the prehistoric record. So you've got to be pretty big not to be crushed out in the ocean depth. In these cartilaginous jawed fishes, we see two chambered hearts, okay? Two chambered hearts, all right? Then we find bony fishes. So initially we see these cartilaginous body fishes, okay? All cartilage back here. So it's actually fairly light. It's not as heavy as it would be if that were all bone, okay? Easier to float. You don't really form bone in fish for a while until you need more strength and rigidity, and it's a little bit of defense, harder to eat. So we see this like bass, okay? We're moving towards getting on land. That's not a conscious decision. The fish aren't saying, hey, I'm trying to get to land, okay? They're just incorporating things that are developing in more effective ways, okay? And that is through mutation and random events. And we'll talk about that more next exam. So we have these initially these bony fishes with a two-chambered heart, okay? One atrium, one ventricle. They only need two chambers because they're pushing the blood against, through the gills, against water. So there's a medium out there applying pressure back to the blood. So you can push it against that, and the pressure applied by the water will balance out, okay? So that you won't burst the cell membrane initially, okay? Then we go to amphibians, all right? See lots of amphibians out there, frogs, toads. These have a three-chambered heart, okay? I'm going to show you pictures of all the hearts here in a few. But they have a three-chambered heart. What is this three-chambered heart doing? Well, they have a mix of blood. In reality, they actually time their heartbeat differently, so that there's a very minimal mixing, okay, a very minimal mixing, but there's still that possibility for mix. How do they get past this? They can breathe through their skin. They can do gas transfers through their skin because of the water, okay? They use the water, and they do gas transfer. This also makes them very susceptible to chemicals in the water. Okay? Those chemicals can easily seep in. That's why we use amphibians as kind of our initial species to see if there's a problem, if there's a pollutant in the area. Okay? They're going to be hit first, and they're going to be hit the hardest. So you can measure their populations and how much they might be fluctuating until, of course, we pull them to the point where they're all gone. Next, we go to reptiles. Reptiles, that's when we see the three-chambered heart, but we also find, in some cases, a four-chambered heart. I'm going to go into the four-chambered heart cases in a few. Now, okay, some of them have what's called a partial septum. Okay, a partial septum is when you have atrium, we'll look at Mickey Mouse, ventricle, one ventricle, okay, that one ventricle, but this partial septum is this muscular ridge in the bottom, a muscular ridge in the bottom that doesn't go all the way up. This is the step between a three-chamber heart and a four-chamber heart. So it's a projection up into that ventricle. What does that do? Well, we have blood flowing in from the body through the atrium. What happens is it hits that and it rolls up, okay? Properties of water. It rolls up, okay? It naturally rotates up towards and pulls and flows up out through the heart. While blood is coming in from the lungs, oxygenated into this atrium, comes down, hits that septum, and rolls on there. There's minimal intermixing, extremely little, when it comes to intermixing of the blood. So they're able to pump at the same time by using these currents, using the natural currents. So have you ever, let's think of a good way of talking about this. If you were pouring water into a bowl, you see how it billows up when you first pour it down the side or down the edge of a glass, right? It billows and billows and billows. If you're pouring something into a glass, billows up.
Okay?
That's the same idea, all right? Except your glass is being poured into from both sides at the same time, okay? You've got a glass with a separation in the center, and you're pouring it in to both sides at the same time, and they billow against each other, okay? So that they don't actually intermix. So that's what the partial septum is. The last two we see are mammals and birds, okay? So we talk about mammals and birds. I'm going to introduce you to a phylogeny, okay? We're going to start with cartilaginous tissues, okay? We see this line coming down. That means down here, this is a early common ancestor. This has happened way, way, way in the past, okay? This tree will continue down all the way to the very first organism that ever came about, okay? So a phylogeny, this end trail, goes all the way back to the first single cell.
Okay?
Goes back and back and back and back and back and back. This is going ahead. Everything we're going to see up here are current living extant species. Species that are alive right now. Or actually, I should say groups. But so we see these cartilaginous fishes. This is all going to be vertebrates from here on in. We're talking about vertebrates. Okay? So we're talking about things that are evolutionarily similar to us. All vertebrates have vertebral column, central nervous system, okay? So we come up, we have a new common ancestor here, and we have bony fishes. New one, okay? We're gonna have amphibians. We're actually gonna break mammals off over here. And we can do that because we can rotate these. We see reptiles.
Yeah, I gotta put reptiles in there.
Reptiles and birds. Otherwise, my next explanation's not gonna work. Now, these two groups are actually breaking off very close to each other. I'm doing a very simple phylogeny. They're breaking off very close to each other. It's based off of how many holes in the skull they have, and then things happen where we get different parts and such, okay? But we're very, very similar down here, okay? We see reptiles and then we see birds up here. We're going to refer back to this in a few. So the two-chambered heart, we have blood flowing. Fishes have slow metabolisms. They're okay with this. They have that counterbalance. They're good, okay? So we see one ventricle, one atrium, two sets of capillaries as usual, right? One set of capillaries gains oxygenation to the blood, one set loses that oxygen to the body, okay? Every time, on every circuit, two sets of capillaries. That's all we're going to see, two sets. One getting oxygen, one dumping oxygen, okay? So if we go full circuit, how many capillary beds do we go through?
Two.
So if I ask you any question about that circuit, what are the three possible answers?
Two, one, zero.
Okay, how many capillary beds do we go through? Could be that we go through none. Could be that we go through one. Or it could be that we go through two. I will not tell you that we're going multiple times through a circuit, because I have no idea how in the world I would word that. So I will tell you we go from here to here, one circuit, okay? So you'll have three possible answers. So if I put anything on the exam, so if I did multiple choice, and I put anything on the exam that was, I don't know, 5, 10, you know those answers are not correct, right? Immediately. If it's not 0, 1, or 2 on a capillary bed question, you know it's not even a possibility. Okay. So then we see the three-chambered heart in amphibians, okay? This is fine because they can breathe through their skin, but the metabolic demands of mammals and birds and some reptiles, the metabolic demands of mammals and birds and some reptiles are too high, okay? Are too high for this circuit to work. We have to get lots and lots of oxygen, okay? The reason, we're maintaining our own internal body temperature. It's important. It takes a lot of energy, okay? It takes a ton of energy. Endothermy versus exothermy. We'll talk about what it takes here in a few. Okay. We absolutely have to have this in birds and mammals. Birds more so than mammals. Birds have a much higher metabolic demand than we mammals do. Okay? They need more energy. Flight is expensive. You don't fly unless you have to. Okay? You don't pay that cost unless you need it. Alright? Well, we've got reptiles kind of in this weird place. Most of these have that partial septum I showed you up top. Interesting to note that an alligator has a four-chambered heart. Why is this a big deal to someone like me? Alligator, four-chambered heart. Birds, four-chambered heart. We're going to see what fits in between there in just a few minutes. Okay? We're going to see what fits in between here. Okay? So, most reptiles, three mammals are coming over. Alligators have a four-chambered heart. Something we also see, and we'll talk about lungs. We may talk about them here in a few, but we may not. Birds have a unidirectional airflow. The air flows and circuits through the system. We breathe in, dead end, and breathe out. Okay, so we have two-directional airflow, down and up. Theirs continues through air sacs, cycles through, and cycles back through, out their mouth, okay? They don't actually stop. The oxygen never stops, okay? We'll talk about why that is. We have found recently in studies that this is also the case in alligators. Alligators also have that unidirectional circuit, which makes my last statements a little more, even more interesting, all right? When we get to them. When we get to the fun stuff at the end. So, we see all three of these lined up together. We've looked at this already in lab. Fish, amphibians, mammals, this stepwise system. Reptiles would have a little block right here, a little upturn, okay? Rotating that blood up. So, here we go. I'm actually going to jump to the end and then jump back, because I feel like that. We'll talk about us after I talk about them. Usually I talk about them before. Then I'm going to come back. Okay, endothermy, ectothermy. Endothermy, ectothermy. So, why would you ever want to spend extra energy on being warm-blooded? What does it actually get you? Faster nerve impulses, better reaction time, stronger, faster, okay? Problem is, you can only get so high, okay? At 46 degrees C, proteins are going to denature. So, you've got to be careful. You want to be quick. You want to be strong, but you don't want to kill yourself, okay? Ectothermy, why cold? It's dirt cheap. You let the environment heat you up. Go for it. That's no energy investment whatsoever. I let the sun heat me up. It's easy, all right? You just sit out there and let it happen. It's expensive to be hot. Birds have a really high daily food requirement compared to a reptile, okay? If you take a bird of mass A and a reptile of same mass, so the same exact amount of weight, okay, they weigh the same, the bird needs 20 to 30 times the amount of food. 20 to 30 times the amount of food every single day just to meet its daily demand, okay? That's how much higher its metabolism is. That's how expensive it is to be warm. Birds, they also have a really high O2 demand, okay? They have way more efficient lungs than us, we'll talk about those. They actually use their sternum when they're breathing. They actually pull their rib cage out. Whereas we're using our diaphragm, they're opening, closing their chest cavity as they're flying. Okay, they're pulling it out, pulling it in. So they're using those muscles of flight at the same time. Their breathing rate can go up to 20 times when flying. The key to how they breathe in this cycle, are the air sacs. They're going so far and so fast that they would heat up to the point very easily, they would heat themselves up to the point where they would start denaturing their protein. They have air sacs in their bones so that they can cycle the air through and the air can pick up heat. Instead of picking up gas, you're already doing gas exchange in the lungs, you pick up heat in the air sacs. takes that heat and they breathe it out. They expel heat along with CO2 when they're breathing out. Okay? These air sacs also make them lighter. Most people focus on the whole lighter aspect of air sacs, but it is extremely important to know that it actually helps keep them cool. Okay? Yeah, getting hot while flying is really easy to do because you're firing lots and lots of muscles, using lots and lots of energy. Okay, continue. Birds also need more blood per heartbeat than mammals. Okay, they have more muscle, higher stroke volume, and way higher blood pressure. We're going to take a step back in a few and look at our own blood pressure. This higher blood pressure makes it more common for birds to do something called an aortic rupture. Your aorta, that artery that's connected right to your body, right to your heart, taking blood back to the body, birds can pump so hard and so much volume that they push the blood right out through it, that they pop that aorta and die. Okay? They can do this during takeoff or when surprised. A lot of times when a bird just dies, like you walk up on a bird, surprise it, and it just dies, it's an aortic rupture. Their heart went like that, and it popped. Don't go out scaring birds, trying to kill them, alright? But I always say that. No matter what other people. But don't go out trying to scare birds and kill them, but that's what's happening there. This is different than when we see most mammals dying when their predators coming after them, okay? In mammals, it's actually an evolutionary defensive tactic. In birds, their defensive tactic is, I'm going to fly away. What are you going to do to me? I'm going to be in the air. Problem is, they try and get in the air too quickly. Boom. Dead. Okay? They want to get out there too quickly. So, man, where am I going with all this? Theropod dinosaurs. Alright? Yeah, I know it's really weird, but guess where they sit? Right there. There we go. Dinosaurs are in between, there we go, are in between alligators and birds. Theropods are on the path to becoming birds. When we see that alligators have a four-chambered heart, and that unidirectional airflow in their lungs, and we see it in birds, what that means is, most of the time, this developed earlier on, or there were already precursors developed, or already precursors evolutionarily. So that leads us, because we can't see the soft tissue structures of these dinosaurs, of these animals, we have to use their closest living relatives. These two closest living relatives show us that these dinosaurs could be extremely efficient at O2 capacity, could have extremely efficient metabolisms, and could be capable of maintaining their own internal body temperature. Okay? So that's where all that craziness is going. Okay? It's fairly possible for a similar system to exist in these dinosaurs. That doesn't mean it's guaranteed that it does. Okay? That's the tough part, because we don't have it. But Jurassic Park, a little bit more of a horror movie, right? If T-Rex can actually do that. When it comes down to it, if there's an alligator, I know this is kind of odd too, but alligators can sprint extremely well. Why? Four-chambered heart. That unidirectional airflow. They can sprint extremely well. They can out-sprint you. Alligators, you want to climb. You don't want to run. Alright? They look like big reptiles. You think they're slow because they're in the water. They will catch you. Go up. They can't. Alright? You have to go up. They are extremely fast. Most people don't realize it. They're one of the gharials out in India are one of the few species that still prey heavily upon people. Okay? People still die from these. Now, are you going to encounter a lot of alligators in the desert? Probably not. Go to Florida? Everywhere. Everywhere. The joke is that alligators live in the sewers. Well, it is sadly not that much of a joke. They are basically everywhere. You'll see them hit on the road. Don't run from those guys. Climb with those guys. Obviously, you have to run to get to something to climb up. But don't just stand there and jump and think that's going to do it. But, right? I've dissected plenty of alligators. They are very, very tough. You need a strong gun. So if you don't have a really powerful handgun, don't try and stand and shoot. Run. Flee. Get up something, then shoot. All right? don't shoot first. Shoot second. Okay. All right. So, crazy aside, but this is the stuff that I kind of work on and research. All right, gas transport. We're going to talk about the generalities of gas transport, okay? Oxygen, not very soluble. It's hard to get oxygen into the blood. So we use a protein called hemoglobin to grab this oxygen and keep a hold of it. There are about a 250 million hemoglobin per red blood cell. We have about 25 trillion red blood cells in our body. This is all give or take, okay? Each person's weight and size determines things like this, okay? If O2 is high in concentration, hemoglobin can get a hold of oxygen and will grab it, okay? It detaches when oxygen's in low concentration. Goes from high to low, high to low, okay? From the hemoglobin to the body. There are problems with this. Anytime we have an enzyme or a big protein that grabs specifically onto something, it can grab the wrong thing. Okay? Carbon monoxide poisoning. Carbon monoxide is attaching to the hemoglobin. It doesn't want to come off. Okay? It's more difficult to get off. That's one of the reasons you're suffocating. Okay? And dying. We've got mercury and we've got cyanide. Mercury attaches really well. It's hard to get it to come unattached. The one place it likes to come unattached is at the blood-brain barrier. So then you get high concentrations of mercury in the brain, and bad things happen. Heavy metal poison. Then there's also cyanide. Cyanide is really bad because it attaches not only to hemoglobin, but it also attaches to one of the important enzymes in the mitochondria. What happens if we attach something and stop an enzyme in the mitochondria? What are we going to stop? Anybody? Power. The power plant. We're going to stop getting ATP. That's bad. You die pretty quick without ATP. You fall apart. So that makes it so that, I mean, you just can't cycle. You're in really bad shape. So we see this gas transport. We can pull oxygen on, take it where we need it, let it go. We'll talk a little more about respiration next time, but we're going to continue about blood right now. Okay. Hypertension is the main cause of heart disease. What is or what causes hypertension? Heredity, race, exercise, obesity, okay? Smoking, alcohol, having too much sodium in your diet, having too much cholesterol in your diet, okay? Lots of things cause hypertension. Exercise, we saw, was good for helping us get HDLs, right? High-density lipoproteins. We're going to talk about this a little more in a second. We see a lot of these happening in tandem. So what's happening when we take in salt? We're increasing the density of the blood. That makes it harder to pump hypertension. Heredity and race, that's kind of a factor of some people don't have blood vessels that are large enough, okay? Some people don't develop them so that they're the proper width, okay? That can be a big problem. Obesity, again, we get into things like cholesterol and such, causing problems. Another part of hypertension with obesity, you end up seeing enlarged hearts. People, they have to pump to a larger distance, a larger portion of body than their design, that they initially developed to. That heart will have to enlarge to deal with it. That will tire it out. We're going to talk about smoking in a second. Alcohol. Smoking increases hypertension. In the short term, the number one thing it does is vasoconstriction. Constricts blood vessels. Okay? It makes those blood vessels tighten. It activates the muscles. The muscles go, oh, I'm supposed to tighten. Okay? So they tighten. They shoot. They fire off. Okay? So that, when you take a tube and you squeeze it tight, increases the pressure inside the tube, right? Also, you take in carbon monoxide when you're smoking. That's going to attach to hemoglobin, all right?
Is coffee a constrictor too?
Yeah, coffee will do vasoconstriction, but it's a short-term. Caffeine is a very short-term issue. It's not like a lifestyle change or anything. Smoking kind of sticks around a little longer with the CO. But the other thing that it does, it increases your total cholesterol and triglycerides, okay, in the blood. But the problem with it, it's only slightly with those, but it significantly decreases the good HDL. That high-density lipoprotein that would grab the cholesterol and take it where it's supposed to go, we've seen this in experiment, okay? That people who smoke have lower levels of HDL than people who don't. And this is a big problem. That means if you're smoking, you're going to be hardening your arteries to some extent. Okay. I don't actually think it's the nicotine. I believe it's some of the other chemicals present in cigarette smoke. And that's why nicotine patches and such are seen as a problem. The nicotine, I believe, is the part that does the vasoconstriction. But I'm not sure whether we've proven or disproven whether the nicotine actually does the HDL problem. I have not done a whole lot of research on it, so I just don't really go into that one. But I know it's glamorous, so people want to smoke because it's glamorous, but it's not really netting you any gain is the big problem with it. Cholesterol, real quick review of the cholesterol. LDL is the bad one. It can deposit the cholesterol in the arterial walls. HDL can take it to the liver, and it can be caught in the liver. We synthesize cholesterol as necessary in our body. So in our body, as we need cholesterol, we make it. We don't really need cholesterol from our diet. Evolutionarily, we didn't really get much cholesterol in our diets. So our bodies found out how to build it. So we build it. We have not changed from that, and we won't. Our bodies will keep building cholesterol as our body sees it to be appropriate. So all we do when we eat extra cholesterol, high cholesterol foods, is give our bodies excessive doses of cholesterol. Cholesterol we don't need. We saw the plaques, we saw atherosclerosis in depth in the videos. We talked about what raised and lowered already, okay? So alcohol is kind of this catch-22 area. It raises HDL, it makes us build more HDL, but it also causes some hypertension. So, is it a good thing or a bad thing? Well, why do I always say moderation? Everything in moderation, okay? Except for some illegal drugs. That's really the reason they're illegal. All types of food and such, in moderation, okay? We are not a specialist consuming species, and I'll talk about this more later in the evolution thing, but we are not a specialist consuming species. We don't just eat one type of plant. We don't just eat one type of meat. Why don't we? Because we're not good at dealing with toxins, okay? Each plant, everything makes toxins as a defensive tactic, okay? You don't want to eat me because I have some amount of toxin in me. High levels of that are a problem. Anything you eat in excess can provide that issue for your body, okay? We are generalists. We are not specialists. We're omnivores. We are as generalist as it gets. We eat anything and everything we can get a hold of. That's why we like buffets, okay? All sorts of stuff, okay? And we can eat all sorts of amounts of it. But we don't sit there and eat just one thing in massive volumes because our body doesn't process it correctly, okay? So carrots are good for you, but if all you eat for 3 days are carrots, it will be bad for you, okay? No matter what it is, the general rule is moderation. If there's one thing I can teach you when it comes to your health, okay? Moderation. Don't go in excess, okay? You guys have all seen this slide before. Oh, let's talk about this last slide, okay? Stroke, okay? Two things. We call stroke the symptoms. We see the symptoms of a stroke, okay? We don't talk about what causes the stroke, okay? Either a blood vessel is blocked or a blood vessel bursts, okay? Those are two very different things, right? One is blocked up, one explodes. Guess what? Same result. Brain doesn't get enough oxygen. That part of the brain stops working, you die. If you have a stroke where it's a rupture, a hemorrhage, you're going to be losing blood throughout your brain. You're going to apply pressure to your brain, and that's what's probably going to kill you, okay, before the blood loss does. The other one, you'll lose part of your brain, part of those nerve cells can die, and you can have major complications after. Stroke is more likely if you have atherosclerosis. You harden your arteries and have very thin arteries, a stroke is more likely to occur, okay? More likely. Now, while the blood bursting, all right, the pressure bursting seems like it would be fast, the other one is a very slow thing, okay? If you, and I say that as in, you will have symptoms for most of the rest of your life, if not the entirety of the rest of your life, okay? Brain damage doesn't heal, okay? Brain damage does not heal. Okay, you may find ways to get around it, find ways to fix, but those issues stay there. Okay, heart attack. We saw that on the video. Okay, we saw that on the video. I talked about bypasses. We would take usually the great saphenous vein, a vein that runs down the inside of your leg. It's very external. It's not actually all that necessary. We have enough drain, we have enough vasculature on the inside of our legs. This is just like a secondary tube. So we will oftentimes remove part of it and flip it because we don't want those valves closing on us. We never want the valves closing on us. So we just turn it around so that the valves can never close. Okay? So the blood will always be going in through. Okay? So we turn it around and we stick it in wherever. Heart usually is the only one we really care about because it's the only one that we need to do quickly, right? We saw that when parts of our body are reduced or have reduced oxygen, it shouts out and says, hey, hey, I need oxygen. So we send more vasculature over there. We saw that just like cancer cells do, okay? All these signals are out there. Blood vessels will crawl over. Places you really got to worry about it, number one is pretty much the heart. We usually don't do bypasses in other areas. A lot of times we'll do angioplasty. I described this a bit in labs, in some of the labs. Basically, we stick a balloon. Let me get my markers. We take a blood vessel. It's got a big blob clot, okay? Big blob in there of cholesterol and fat. Take a balloon in there. We inflate said balloon. It pushes it back up. Okay? It pushes and applies pressure to it, sometimes compressing it, sometimes breaking it up. Sometimes there can be major complications because of that. Or we can put in a stent, which is kind of like a big wire mesh in there, that we go inside of the tube, causing a longer lasting, a permanent pushed open area. Now, the stent can, of course, start getting cholesterol problems on top of it. Okay? The epithelial cells can grow out around it as well. So there are problems with both. None of it's perfect, but that's what we can do now, which is much better than what we could do in the past. Nothing. So we can deal with it a bit. That's good. Best way to deal with it, don't have it. We usually don't see these things until bad, bad stuff happens. Okay? So you want to be proactive. You don't want the bad thing to happen to you. Okay? Because once it does, it doesn't repair properly.